McQueen, and Willie McQueen. Via tracks from old school, legends, all the way to the newest and the latest artists. Again, that's the Zydeco Pasole Show, every Sunday from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, also known as HD1, I might add. This is going to be an open forum, as is commonly the case, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Like to do my thing about voting. Last day to register for the 2019 general elections, and apparently that is the next election. It's a general. There are no primaries now running for 2019, to my knowledge, at this point. Last day to register is October 7th, harrisvotes.com, votetexas.gov, and you can see if you're properly registered, if there's anything you need to check. You can also go to vote.org. One of those things, you can find the information you need to check on your status, get any registration information, etc. Charles Kuffner does a daily piece called Off the Cuff. I try to keep tabs on him. I have a lot of home pages. I have about a dozen home pages for various information sources, and I just have to go through the tabs. And this was interesting. He has a headline called "The Battle for the Ledge," meaning the Texas legislature, "is going to be lit." He cites heavily from the Texas Tribune. And the Tribune article he cites says, "Some Democrats are mobilizing in hopes of taking the 9 House seats they need for a majority in 2020. As Republican House Speaker Dennis Bonin tries to prevent intra-GOP challenges in the primaries." And what he cites goes on to say some Democrats, both in Texas and outside, are already putting on the fight for the majority in the state house. Views vary on just how within reach the majority is. But few disagree that 2020 will be a frenzied cycle. Democrats are trying to build on their recent gains. Republicans, meanwhile, are pushing to take back seats. And from State Senator Kelly Hancock, Republican of North Richland Hills, "Everything is focused on redistricting," said the Tea Party. At the recent Tea Party meeting, he fielded questions about the demise of some controversial legislation. He went on to say, "There is nothing more important." Here I agree with him. There is nothing more important, not only in Texas, but literally the nation, than to make sure, well, in his case, maintaining the Texas House, going into redistricting, because if you look at the nation, if the GOP loses Texas, they lose the nation, and there's no other place to go. This was what was important in 2010, when Obama was elected in 2008, and then a lot of his supporters didn't show up at the polls in 2010, and Republicans captured a buttload of state houses and redistricted and gerrymandered. A lot of that put us where we are now. So it's important to turn out and vote. Generally speaking, more people self-identify as Democrats than Republicans, so a heavy turnout generally favors Democrats. Also, there was an article. It's sort of questionable in terms of the math that they did. But basically speaking, Texas is turning more Hispanic. And within maybe 10 years, people that self-identify as Hispanic will be a plurality in Texas, meaning not a majority, but like a majority minority. And non-whites are more likely to vote Democratic. So, you know, turnout. Just because it's an off election year, I think if I'm not mistaken, we're going to be voting for mayor, which is technically nonpartisan in Houston, but you have to do your homework. Well, that means we'll also be voting for the city council and probably a number of county spots. So pay attention, folks. This is going to be 2019, 2020, especially 2020, but there's no such thing as a minor election, okay? From Charles Cuff, his analysis is, at this point, the name of the game is one-part candidate recruitment. You see, this is getting down to nitty-gritty, and one-part raising money. In Harris County, we have two good candidates for GOP target seats, actually two in each of two seats. Not going to get down into the weeds on that. But basically, there's no such thing as an unimportant election. 2019 matters, 2020 matters. Be paying attention. Okay, the phone number is 713-526-5738. It is open forum, and we do have a caller. Scott, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hi, thank you. I just got a new book about Rush Limbaugh. It's called The Tribalization of Politics by Ian Reifowitz. And I've read it, and I find Rush Limbaugh has a longer nose than I even thought.
Okay, are we talking a Pinocchio nose or a physiological nose?
I certainly am.
Okay.
Yeah, and
I'm shocked.
He's been a big factor in the war on Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah.
The war to get somebody like Trump in office. Now, I am not clear on whether he writes his own propaganda or whether it is passed down to him. But there is a well-coordinated right-wing propaganda machine, and he is a big cog in it.
The Republicans and the right are great about message discipline.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, he may come up with some of his own talking points. He may try to get that message discipline from him to others. But
right.
There's no question that others get that message discipline to him. It's sort of an ecosystem, a message ecosystem.
Yeah.
And they also focus group this stuff.
Yeah.
And then the word comes down.
They have money for focus groups.
So, yeah. I mean, I have to admit, now, I tend toward non-right-wing information sources as a general rule. And Rush Limbaugh doesn't come up much in the sources I follow. I don't doubt that he's still influential, but the crown, so to speak, seems to have gone to people like Hannity.
Okay.
In terms of influence.
Okay, yeah, I think Rush got a lot of boycotts directed at him over the last few years, so he may not be quite as important as he was, but still, he did play a big part and got the war underway against Obama.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, he started, what, in the 90s? Late 80s, 90s?
And... Oh, I think he started actually in 1988.
Okay.
But I did not hear of him until 1992 when a campaign colleague wanted me to write a letter to a TV station complaining about him. So I wanted to know what I would be complaining about. So I watched him on TV three nights in a row. And I heard when he talked about feminazis, and I heard him complaining about money spent on HIV research because he said you can't cure a virus.
Well, from a technical standpoint, he's sort of right, but you can prevent the viruses, you can suppress viruses. We don't have the equivalent of antibiotics for viruses.
Right, yeah, but there has been considerable research done
yes.
on
and a lot
HIV,
of progress.
And it is not easy, but People today, infected people today, can take medications that keeps it under control. It was not that way in 1981.
No, they've done, and I think incentivized by HOV in particular, but they've done a lot of research since then on antivirals. I don't think you can call them viricides.
Yeah, they're called antivirals.
Antivirals, which in some cases, like the flu, if you take it early enough, it can actually shorten the term of something like the flu.
Yeah.
But mostly it's about suppression. And we have not yet gotten, now you can work on vaccines. We have an awful lot of successful antiviral vaccines. But once a virus takes hold, it's a very tough thing.
Yeah. Well, the Limbaugh virus has taken hold, and it will be tough to get rid of.
Yes. That is the truth. Okay, I'm going to let you go, Scott, unless you got something else you want to add.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Scott. You take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We have open lines. It's open forum, 713-526-5738. There's a lot of stuff going on in the news. There are some top headlines. And, of course, we know that, you know, Trump was going to attack Iran until he wasn't. I don't like to go into that top headline stuff, but if you want to call and talk about it, I'm cool with that. The next topic I was going to talk about is kind of interesting, fun, legally intriguing, kind of falls into all those areas. Got this from CNN. Supreme Court says law banning registration of, quote, scandalous trademarks violates the First Amendment. This is really interesting. The Supreme Court on Monday struck down a provision of federal law that prohibits the registration of, quote-unquote, immoral or scandalous trademarks as a violation of the First Amendment. The justice's ruling clears the way for a clothing designer to apply for a federal trademark for his clothing line called, and interestingly, it's called F-blank-blank-T. It isn't foot, but it's a word that phonetically I cannot say on the radio. And yet, there we have it. The ruling, which was unanimous in part and 6-3 in part, could open the doors to more requests to register words or phrases that have been considered vulgar, a concern that the court's minority feared. Now, if you go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, I have links to everything that I talk about pretty much, including stuff I never get to. And there is a link on item number 3, which this is, that's Supreme Court ruling on First Amendment and trademark. You can actually read the ruling. So it goes on. In 2011, Brunetti, the guy who initiated the suit, sought to register the mark with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and the office refused because the name was the phonetic equivalent of the past tense of a vulgar word. And it was determined that federal law prohibits the registration of trademarks that consist of scandalous subject matter. Entrepreneur Eric Brunetti said he founded a clothing brand in 1990 to question the authority and the assumptions of society. He said his company's name stands for Friends You Can't Trust, F-U-C-T. But, of course, that isn't how people read it. Justice Kagan wrote that the statute, quote, does not draw the line at lewd, sexually explicit, or profane marks. Instead, it covers the universe of immoral or scandalous material. A law disfavoring ideas that offend discriminates based on viewpoint in violation of the First Amendment, she wrote. Kagan was joined by Justices Thomas, Bader Ginsburg, Alito, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch in full. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Breyer and Sotomayor concurred in part and dissented in part. Alito suggested Congress could step in and act and modify the law. Now, what I mean, this is interesting. You know, you can make fun of the trademark issue at hand, so to speak, or at foot, F*T. But, you know, this is a freedom of speech issue that used to be sort of settled, that now society is reaching, maturing, going, however you want to frame it, to a point where free speech is becoming freer in some senses, at least in this particular case. So, interesting ramifications. We have open lines. The phone number is 713-526-5738. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We also have an HD2 channel. KPFT.org is how you find out what's going on at the station, learn about the shows. When it's working, you can download shows or podcast them. You can also go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, or follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. Okay, we do have a caller on the line. Samuel, you're on the air. How are you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
Okay, what's on your mind?
Man, I just hopped on, started driving not too long ago, but I was hearing the discussion about, Donald Trump and propaganda and people going after certain individuals, or, news outlets going after certain individuals. And I just thought it was interesting that I keep hearing about these hemp bills that are popping up, and we can all bash Trump at the end of the day for a lot of things he does wrong, but one of the few things he actually did right that didn't get a lot of publicity is when he signed the hemp farm bill in December 2018, which made it legal nationwide to grow hemp. So I mean, good things are happening even in Texas. Greg Abbott signed the hemp law and not too long ago in the state of Texas, so it's now legal to grow it here.
Now, I mean, there are a lot of issues and debates around the topic. When you talk about hemp as a crop, it used to be a very important cash crop in the United States in terms of making rope and clothing and canvases. And aside from whatever you might smoke, I think that hemp is actually different in terms of its characteristics. Hemp that's grown like for rope is not good to smoke, for example, as I understand it.
Right.
So I'm not necessarily against legalizing hemp as a crop. I think you probably would prefer to go a little further than that, though.
Yes.
Sounds
I mean,
like.
I do recall hearing as well that there was going to be a vote nationwide in 2020 on the legalization of cannabis.
How would that work? I mean, I don't think you can have a nationwide plebiscite. That's a state thing. So I don't
know. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was a voted on issue in 2020. Maybe not.
No, I don't think so. It might go state by state. There's always the remote chance of a constitutional amendment, but even that's done legislature by legislature. So I don't think that would be correct as a national plebiscite.
Okay. Good to clarify that. But I mean, that's all news that makes me more hopeful that, despite the stupidity from both sides of the aisle, people are starting to come to their senses and see the light in the truth of the matter. So, I mean, it's only a matter of time before the politicians we have now sort of fade out into the past and new fresh faces come in and basically write more sensible laws.
Science fiction writer Jack McDevitt at a conference, it's a little morbid but true. He said once that civilization advances one funeral at a time.
Yeah.
And changes of generation do matter politically. I mean, when Clinton was elected as the first president who had not been in the Second World War, that was like a major thing. And we're seeing a slow generational turnover now. But now I am going to mention we do have open lines, 713-526-5738. But I want to ask you, I am not a fan of marijuana.
Okay.
I don't react well to it. And there are people like me. I've spoken to a number. So for some people, it isn't just sort of an innocent, fun drug. Some people actually have negative reactions to it. So,
oh, that's very understood.
Yeah. So, well, I don't think it's well understood by the community, by the marijuana smoking community at large. I don't think that it's understood that there is a minority that react badly. Now I'm an old school guy. I'm a baby boomer. I on the one hand, I understand the connection between alcohol and marijuana as both being mood-altering drugs. I do get that. I do see, though, that there is a difference, and I think that there can be both a psychological and physical dependency on either or both. But I find alcohol at least has the redeeming quality of being something that can be socialized, something that can be imbibed without the intent of simply getting high or getting drunk, whereas nobody smokes pot or eats pot for the flavor. It's strictly for the goal of getting high. So, I mean, I might argue, and I'm on the fence on this. You know, I'm still working through my thoughts on it. But yeah. I might argue that alcohol as a mood-modifying drug has more socially redeeming qualities than marijuana. Now, medicinally, we're talking different stuff. There's certainly some evidence that it has that hemp or marijuana or variations thereof have certain medicinal purposes when properly regulated and controlled. But
right.
What are your feelings about that? About alcohol as having uses other than mood modification or significant mood modification, whereas marijuana is strictly for getting smashed?
Yeah, so, I mean, I am a user of cannabis. I do use it pretty regularly. I find that it helps a lot with my back pain and my physical fatigue that I get from the industry I work in. And there's a lot of people I know that use it responsibly, even more often than not. People use it strictly to relax and to ease their pain and alleviate, you know, stress or whatever it is, benefits from ingesting it. Now, I mean, I would favor more like vaporized or cooked forms that are healthier to consume rather than just smoking it. But, you know, the act of it is ceremonial, I think, and it's also the tradition and the very long history of the plant that really has, you know, some sort of kindred tie to us, because we do have endocannabinoid receptors in our brain, and that's how the CBD and CBGs and CBCs can properly heal our nervous system and other parts of our body just by those receptors. So I view it as like, you know, if I were to be in your shoes and maybe not be so into it, I would still want people who need it, like my aunt or, you know, my other parts of family or people who need it medically to have access to it, because I think it should be legal.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but let's now break it down into three categories. You've got regulated medicinal marijuana or CBD. And in that case, you have standardized dosages, you have controllable effects. So that would be truly medicinal. It's,
right.
It's predictable. And then you have self-medicating, which is the equivalent of over-the-counter nutritional aids, which are highly variable and not closely regulated, and even what the label says is not necessarily what you get. So that's the second category. And the third category is just the raw stuff. So
right.
I acknowledge that there seems to be a body of evidence for medicinal benefits. I mean, even my wife and her nutritional studies every once in a while, or her colleagues every once in a while, I'll run across a cannabinoid reference. So there's certainly research being done in that area about the receptors, about the effects of the cannabinoids themselves. But we really are talking about three different universes of cannabis application. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there are quite a bit, because it is so versatile as a plant. So there are so many different directions you can go with it.
So on the one hand, you could look at a marijuana party, if you will, as being something like a beer bash, you know, where the idea is to get drunk, the idea is to get high. And I suppose on a social scale, those two things are not different except by the chemistry that's used.
Yes.
But is that, and allowing for the reality of that, is that necessarily something, though, that we want to encourage? I mean, it's like we no longer encourage heavy drinking. Do we want to be in a position that allows or encourages on some social or communal level hey, grass is now legal, let's all smoke.
I think it's more of a, it's not so much encouraging, but it's destigmatizing the act of it, and just, you know, knowing the history behind the plant and how nobody has ever overdosed on the plant itself alone.
Well, what do you define as an overdose? I mean, it's not. I don't know whether or not cannabis has an equivalent to alcohol-induced cirrhosis of the liver or something of that nature. But you know, when you're smoking, it's worse than cigarettes. You don't even have a filter on it, and you do get various tars and things, residues that you're inhaling. So it's not healthy to smoke. Would you concur?
I mean, long term, no.
Right. It's like smoking. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I would say in general the smoke is not as harmful as cigarettes, oftentimes because cigarettes, they put a bunch of different chemicals in there.
Yeah. And some occur naturally in the tobacco. Yeah, there are additives that they don't like to talk about, and I get that. But if they legalize marijuana, don't you think as it's commercialized, you'll get the same?
Right, I do have that concern that the pharmaceutical and tobacco and all that industry is going to try and capitalize and possibly monopolize that whole French. But
yeah, we have to be careful with that.
But I think that that's
direction. You're talking, of course, about the clothing line that the Supreme Court recognized the trademark for, which is not that word. That's what you're actually talking about when you used that word, right? Okay, go ahead.
Right. So, I mean, it's just, it's a flawed argument because, you know, anybody who needs the plant has access to it. At the end of the day, I mean, the trade-offs work in the favor of legalization, in my opinion. I just don't really think there's any legitimate argument that, you know, and you can get into the whole criminal justice / cartel argument, too, about the drug war.
There are legal, tax, medicinal, all social, all kinds of discussions or arguments, maybe both, that need to take place. And, you know, like the end of Prohibition, we're just going to have to adapt.
Right. And I think Prohibition not only, you know, basically provokes the act from continuing, but it also just it makes it harsher for the people who do get punished and sentenced, and that's what we see with the drug war. People, you know, I think I read a statistic like over 50% of all prisoners in the U.S. are nonviolent offenders.
Yeah,
it's the weirdest thing, man.
Yeah. I'm going to have to let you go. Let me ask you, are you a first-time caller?
I'm sorry?
Are you a first-time caller, just out of curiosity?
I am not. I'm actually a contributing member.
Great. Okay.
I love this station.
I'm starting to try to keep track of that stuff. All right. I appreciate it, Samuel. Take care. Good discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Take care. All right. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. ThinkWingRadio.com is my website where I post links to all the stuff I talk about on my shows, except marijuana, I'll concede. I didn't anticipate that. You can also go to kpft.org, where you can learn about the station, contribute to the station, help out the station, run for the board on the station, all kinds of possibilities. Okay, Landon, I believe, is up next. Landon, how are you today? Are you a first-time caller? Your name's not familiar.
Hey there, yeah, doing well. I am actually, in fact, a first-time caller.
Excellent. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I just a college student here. I think I'd heard talk about cannabis on the show. And you know, I think it's a little disingenuous to say that if you're going to be consuming cannabis or if a group of people is going to be consuming cannabis, it's always for the express purpose of getting, you know, smashed or, you know, to what you said earlier.
Okay.
That, you know.
How would you define it then? Because I'm curious.
Well, no. So I would definitely agree that a lot of the time that can be the goal. But I think that overlooks situations in which you're consuming cannabis to, you know, I don't want to, how to say this, to maybe augment like a certain experience you're having for the day. I know that friends of mine and I, we have gone on like hikes, things like that. We've gone to concerts, to the beach, and you know, we'll just bring, you know, a little bit with us, and it's not, we don't show up and then are just so stoned we can't enjoy the experience. It just, can make it a little bit more fun.
Are you saying that you can do the equivalent of getting buzzed on marijuana, where you're just like a little, used to use a phrase, happy, without actually getting smashed on it? You're saying that you can actually moderate it and control it to that extent, and that people do?
Yeah, no, I would definitely say that. That's a good way to put it. I think that with people who maybe don't have a lot of experience with the stuff, it can be a little bit more difficult to do that. Because I know you mentioned earlier, and it's something that is overlooked, some people do react poorly to it, and it's not something a lot of people talk about. But I think whenever you have just, you know, a group of people that have maybe used it before, you can just do it a little bit, and it can, like, you know, make it a little bit more fun, whatever activity you're doing.
Mm. And, of course, to some extent, that argues for predictable, controllable varieties or brands, if you will, of cannabinoids.
See, you know, I don't know if I'd go that far, because, you know, I think you mentioned with the CBD earlier how, you know, having predictable, controlled, I don't know. In my experience, I don't think that you could really deliver the same product every time and expect the same results. I don't know. Maybe it's because we're not really in a world right now where you can have that when it comes to cannabis and cannabis products.
I'm betting that from legalization to that point would be 5 years or less, because I imagine it's already being worked on.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sure. It's just not something I'm entirely, you know, familiar with. But yeah, I could definitely see that being the case eventually.
Okay. Would you like to add anything else, or should we go on to the next caller?
That was about it. My drive's about done anyway.
Good deal. I appreciate your calling. I appreciate your thoughts. You take care. Call again.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Now, we lost somebody. Is Mongo? We're going to go to Mongo now? Okay. So, Johnny, you'll be next. Mongo, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. Are you a first-time caller?
I have called before on several shows. I believe I've been on your show before.
Okay.
We discussed some
unusual name. I'm surprised it didn't stick with me. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm going to give you guys some insight.
Okay.
Bless you all with a little bit of insight. As a former cultivator and purveyor of cannabis, I can say that there are several things that you guys hit on that were right, several things that you guys hit on that were wrong.
Okay.
It is possible with gas chromatography, mass spectral analysis, to produce a consistent product and to scientifically verify that. It's being
no
done
doubt.
Right now with the cannabis, with the whole CBD thing, cannabinoid thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to certify that your cannabinoid product is a certain percentage of CBD, is a certain percentage or less than of tetrahydrocannabinol, which is a psychoactive ingredient.
Okay.
I'd also like to say that it's very hard to compare cannabis to any other drug. There's no toxicity level that we've been able to approach. There are no physical signs of addiction to cannabis. You can become mentally addicted to cannabis, but heck, you can become mentally addicted to cheeseburgers, let's admit it.
Well, I mean, I think that when you talk about cigarettes, which would be my closest approximation, I don't consider myself an ex-smoker. I always consider myself a recovering smoker. I don't think there's any such thing like an ex-alcoholic. And I think that, you know, you're talking about both a physical dependency and an emotional dependency. I mean, I have not smoked since 1983. Now, I've been in smoke-filled rooms, and occasionally that's challenging, and I don't stop people from smoking around me. But while I think I've probably gotten the nicotine dependency out of my system, there is still occasionally just that mental twinge just flashes through my head, this would be a good time for a cigarette. And that's since 1983.
Well, I'm sure there's probably guys out there that haven't tasted a cheeseburger in 10 years, and when they smell one on the grill, it's just, you know, it takes them back to that place.
Well, I think you're talking about vegans, recovering carnivores.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. That's a completely different.
It is. But I think there's a loose analogy there.
I agree with you, sure. But once again, as a purveyor of cannabis, someone who was in the industry on the black market side, I can tell you this, the people I dealt with, I never felt in danger of my life. Of course, these are all people and friends of friends. I never worried. I was never armed whenever I went to a transaction. It would be like if I was taking a case of craft beer to your house or some homemade wine. It's really along those lines. You don't find anyone prostituting themselves for cannabis. Ask any law enforcement officer which intoxicant laden subject they would prefer to deal with, and I guarantee you every time on the money it's going to be cannabis.
Now, that's an interesting point. I mean, that is an interesting point, that while there might be either an emotional and or physical dependency or receptor that wants to be satisfied that begins to get very controlling, but you don't so much hear, if ever, someone getting into the sex trade in order to pay for their marijuana habit. That is
robbery,
that's an interesting point.
In a robbery or the money side that comes along with it, that is where you get into the criminal element. By making this
because it's illegal.
Yes, and you'd have no recourse as a person who is involved in this trade other than to fend for yourself in that situation. But if you do this by closed-mouthedness and by virtue of those of keeping your circle small, then you never. This is something that will never enter into your world. And like I said, by no means was I a Scarface. I was just someone who was tired of trying to procure an inconsistently.
Scarface did not have a happy ending.
Right.
Well, but I mean, we're really kind of veering off into a different topic. We're veering off into black market marijuana and to what degree it's safe or unsafe or the types.
California's having to lower the cost of doing legal marijuana business right now because the black market trade is still in full effect and is more, it's just as prominent as it ever was because not everyone is going to go to the government and pay their, whatever their fees are to become regulated.
It's like when they steal cigarettes so that, so they don't have to pay the tax and then they black market them.
And you can't grow, you can't grow tobacco in your backyard. I could take probably 60-75% of your listeners and school them in about a week on how to grow cannabis on their own. And if you're growing from a clone, you don't need anything other than viable genetics. Genetics is key.
Well, environment, I mean, like any plant, it's environment and nutrients and, you're going to get variation in the product. That's just nature. But marijuana, even legal marijuana purveyors, because of current law, they're a cash business, and no bank wants to do business with them. So this also gets really, really interesting. But I have to tell you, Mongo, I love the conversation, but I've got a couple of other folks on the line that I need to get to, but
awesome.
I do hope you call back.
Please keep doing good. Keep doing the good work that you're doing.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Okay, we have open lines. The number is 713-526-5738. We have time to get people on, so if you want to talk, make the call, 713-526-5738. Johnny, you are on the air. How are you doing today?
Okay, Mike, feeling better. Before I give you my question, I just wanted to make a comment that I think banks are afraid to do business with the corporate or the private growers, producers, sellers.
It's still illegal for
they
them.
Don't want to.
It's not fear. It's still illegal.
Federal law. And look who's in the White House.
Let's not.
You agree?
I can blame a lot on Trump, but this is not something that I blame specifically on Trump. This is a generational thing. This is a law-in-place thing. To some extent, there are scientific questions. There are nutritional questions. There are medical, neurological receptor questions. I mean, there are a lot of issues around this. But certainly thoughts and studies and ideas about this have to evolve.
We have lots of information about alcohol and liquor, but those are legal to sell and consume.
Well, we also, it's also legal to sell and consume, in a manner of speaking, guns, and the Republicans have made it illegal to collect data on that.
Right.
So,
but I never pulled up on a first out scene in all my years in the 1980s. On a car wreck scene where I could smell or see evidence of people smoking pot. Always alcohol and beer. Never the pot.
I think that's a stretch, though, to say that it's never involved in accidents due to the influence. I mean, people...
I'm just not with you there. But listen, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You said earlier, I need you to clarify for me.
All right, if I can.
I didn't get to hear everything you said on the radio, so that's why I'm calling in.
It's all right.
You mentioned three levels of pot, I guess. One is the controlled medicinal type you get with prescription.
I didn't say prescription.
And the third was, I forgot what you said.
Well, I actually didn't say prescription. I was careful about not using that word. What I said was medically controlled, nutritionally controlled, where what you think you're getting is what you're getting. The proportions of the various chemicals, let's say the beneficial chemicals, are what you expect, as opposed to the second thing, which would be like the nutrient supplement market, where you can have a label that says a thing, but when they do tests, sometimes it's not even remotely close to what the label says it is. And then you have the raw product is the third thing, where essentially you're taking seeds or stems or leaves or whatever and doing the curing process, whatever is involved, and then essentially smoking the raw material or otherwise ingesting it. So those would be my three levels. I'm sorry?
That you're growing yourself?
No, I mean, if you are ingesting in some form a leaf, a stem, unless that has somehow been certified, I only know from reading that there are like gazillions of varieties and people have names for them, and that, you know, it's like craft beers in a way, but it's still a plant, and plants have variation. You can't make them absolute. There's going to be variation. So you've got medicinally controlled, not necessarily prescription, but probably. Then you've got the over-the-counter market, the OTC, and then you've got essentially the raw materials, stems, seeds, leaves.
So if I'm correct, and you tell me if I'm not, does that mean that it's dangerous, in your opinion, for someone like myself to order edibles over the Internet from a supplier from California, let's say, because in this dumb state we have a bunch of rednecks who are against progress?
I don't want to use the term dangerous, but certainly variable. And, you know, there's been a lot of research over the years. I'll admit I'm not steeped in that research. I try to be generally well-read and generally open and constructive-minded. But, you know, yeah, it's a natural product. And natural, you know, people say nature is good, but when everything was natural, life expectancy was 35. So there you go.
Well, cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys, they're natural. But look at what American business does to them.
Not arguing with that.
Certification okay. Does not necessarily equal qualification, Mike, and you know that.
Yeah, when the big companies get into it, things are bred for certain characteristics and whatnot. Johnny, if it's okay.
I think the bottom line for me, and you can tell me if you agree or not. Can you hear me still?
Yeah, but we need to wrap up.
Okay. Listen, for me, the bottom line is maybe word of mouth. If there's someone I know in California who I trust, and they've had good experience over a long time, and they can and they recommend it, I would go with that. You have a problem with that?
I don't know. I mean, this is not a topic I was prepared for today. So this is all stuff that's off the top of my head, based on things I recall reading or hearing, basically anecdotal. I can't cite anything. So
and
that's kind of how I'm going. I'm sorry?
That's why people call you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Next week or next month when you get around to it, do a more intense version of today's discussion. I think that would be a great public service.
I'm sure it will come up in my reading at some point.
Okay, I look forward to it. Mike, have a good day.
Thank you. You too, Johnny. Take care. All right, we have open lines. The number is 713-526-5738. I think that we can probably get some additional callers in the show. I try to get on everybody that calls when I say we can do that. Next up is Ed. Ed, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. Are you new?
I don't think I've called your program yet.
Cool. Okay.
I think this is the first time.
Excellent. Well, welcome.
I just want to say one thing.
All right.
I don't know of anybody who gets high, goes home, and beats the crap out of his wife.
It's a mellow. It seems mellower. You don't get so many mean marijuana users as opposed
right.
to mean alcoholics. Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I could probably agree with that.
Yeah, I know some mean drunks. I don't know many mean potheads.
Interesting point. So I've had a couple, three interesting points to contemplate from the show today. So that's cool.
And something totally different. 180.
Good.
Why do we have to ask people to go vote? That gets me so mad. Oh, we got to get these people out to vote. Well, nobody has ever bribed me out of the chair to go vote.
You know,
almost every election.
Where are you from originally, if I may ask?
I am from Denison, Texas, up north of Dallas.
Okay, so you're already from a state that has a traditionally low voting turnout, whereas I am originally from Brooklyn, which statistically is one of the highest turnout for voting states, not just the city, but statewide. And I think, you know, there are two issues. One is cultural. I mean, it's sort of like passing on religion or sports fandom, you know. It's like what you grow up with. So it's partly tradition, and I think it's partly access. There are states that make access harder than other states. I think Texas is one of those historically. So we need to ask people to vote because for some people they don't have the habit. They don't have the inculcation, I think would be the word. And for some people, it's not convenient. Some people have been suppressed by various pseudo-legal means, whether it's taking them off the voter rolls or moving the precincts around or, you know, limiting precincts in areas that might vote heavily Democratic. So for some people, it's more challenging, and they have to get off their butts and actually be hassled. I think that's all mixed in.
Yeah, well, you know, I can remember the first time I voted was in 1974, off-year election, and I can remember the little country church that I had to go vote at.
Mm.
And, again, these people just... Is it not true that Ferguson, Missouri, is mostly black?
It's what I've heard.
Okay, that's what I've heard. And yet, they have a police force that makes money by giving people tickets.
And the police force is predominantly white.
Yes. So how does this happen if people don't vote? I mean, if...
Well, what people don't understand, and it always bears repeating, you know, presidential elections always get the highest turnouts. And, you know, that's good as far as it goes. But the things that affect people personally are the smaller local elections, and those sometimes you get 3% turnout. And when people start to understand that, yeah, it's great to vote for president and governor and senator and house, that really the things that are most apt to affect their immediate lives are mayor, council person, county judge, various state positions. Those are the things that are really close to them, and yet those off-year elections like 2019, we get very low turnouts. But those are the things that really affect people's lives the most. And we just need to get that in their heads, and that may incentivize them a little more to vote.
Yeah, but again, I the idea of begging somebody, go, please go out there and vote, you know, anyway, that's neither here nor there. Hey, I like your program.
I appreciate that.
I'll probably be calling in again.
I hope so. I do appreciate your calling. You take care, Ed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is how you learn about the station, volunteer for the station, get information on the programmers at the station, send money to the station. You can do all those things at KPFT.org. My website is thinkwingradio.com. I post shows and links, and I occasionally post articles and other interesting artifacts. And I am also on Twitter, at Thinkwing Radio. Okay, Albert? I believe you're next. How are you doing today? You're on the air.
All right, sir. How you doing, Mr. Mike Koenig? It's great to be on your show.
Thank you. Are you a first-time caller?
I am.
Cool. I mean, I love all my callers, but first-time callers are exciting. So,
and I listen to you quite a bit. I've just never called, except for earlier you said that when you smoke cannabis, you get sick or something.
I don't react well to it. I mean, the last time I smoked anything, I was probably in high school or a freshman in college, and it was peer pressure. And I smoked, I think, maybe 3 times. And, of course, I don't know what I smoked, but varying degrees of effect. And I've experienced the increase in appetite, and, like, apples are wonderful. But it also tended to make me a little paranoid.
Right.
And it sort of did a time dilation thing with me where it seemed like things slowed down, and I guess I'm a little bit more of a control person. I don't like getting more than buzzed on alcohol either. I start to sort of get a spinning head nausea thing, and same thing happens with pot, so it's just not for me.
Yeah, so what I was going to tell you, recommend, was I hung out for maybe about 10, 15 years. I went to Amsterdam about 15 years ago, and we smoked the really strong stuff, right? And so I also did not react well to it. And so when I got back to the States, I was like, you know what, maybe weed wasn't for me. Maybe, you know, cannabis wasn't for me. And so I didn't do it anymore for a long time. And then my little brother, who smokes daily, was like, hey, you know, they make edibles, and the edibles you can actually get in, like, different amounts of THC. And he goes, why don't you try an edible and start with the lowest amount and see how that reacts with you? And I got to tell you, Mike, that was definitely the way to go. I got the smallest 10 micrograms of THC in whatever, like little chocolate balls that they sell. And they sell these in, like, Denver. They sell them in Las Vegas.
Maybe at some point when I'm a little more mature, Maybe I'll sample something like that. I really don't feel a driving need. You know, it's kind of like I gave up smoking, and I haven't smoked since I was 32, and I'm now 68. So I'm still a recovering smoker, in my opinion. I drink in moderation. I've only been drunk once in my life, and that was after leaving Family Court, which is a whole other story. So
the reason I brought this up to you was because since you got sick or whatever, it didn't react well. I didn't react well either. And so once I started taking the lower doses of THC, it actually was an interesting drug. It's very very relaxing, very calming, and I didn't feel like I was losing too much control there. So it didn't feel so bad.
Well,
I didn't feel sick.
Maybe, over time, if it becomes more predictable and maybe you can get it off the shelf in smaller, safer quantities, you never know. Maybe I'll experiment with it when it's legal. But, I mean, I don't feel a driving need. But I appreciate your input.
No problem. And you do have a great show.
Thank you so much. All right. I mean, you can try calling 713-526-5738. I've got about 6 or 8 minutes, so we'll see how that goes. Next up is Mark. Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
I feel good. I agree with everything you said about the voting, you know, the habit, and some states are more voter-friendly than others, but a lot of what is not mentioned is the fact that we look at the low unemployment we have in this country, and what a lot of people don't realize is the one reason why it's so low is because of the fact people are working two jobs.
Yeah, there's employment and there's employment.
And I think, my opinion, and actually there's a lot of countries that do this, they actually have a national holiday so the people can get out and vote.
Yes, and that, of course, has been a topic. You know, the Tuesday thing, I have heard that started because it took people, when they had horses and had to go on foot, that they would come basically after church, and then it would take them a couple of days to get to the polls.
Right.
So, you know, that was then. And it's become very traditional. It's not in the Constitution. It's something we can change by statute. But yeah, I think that there should be a national holiday. But of course, now when you're talking national holiday, you've got to think of the implications of that. Does that include utility workers, gas station employees? I mean, who would not get the national holiday would get simply double time pay for working through it? So there's that. The emergency personnel, EMT, you know.
We would have to do a deeper study of the countries that actually do this. I'm not asking for everything to be completely shut down, but, yeah, I mean, there could be a way to do this to make it easier for those people that have to work two jobs. You know, people are always saying, you know, a lot of it's voter apathy. It's like, it's not voter apathy when they got to leave one job and go to work for another.
Well, that's in the mix. Let me tell you what my thought is, if I may. I think early voting and accessible early voting, like Diane Trout is now doing in Harris County, where early voting, you can go anywhere that's open to vote. And then on election day, you can go anywhere that's open to vote. You don't have to stick to your precinct. So she's taking full advantage of a state law that was passed. So accessible and extended early voting. And I believe that on election day, especially on a national election day, you should have a 24-hour election day where all the polls open and close at the same time, regardless of time zone. So, you know, maybe they'll go from 10 a.m. to 10 a.m. on the East Coast and 7 a.m. to 7 a.m. on the West Coast. But so everybody has a portion of their day. If it's a legal holiday, that's great. And if they're essential workers, they still get time to vote because it's a 24-hour election day plus maybe 2 weeks of early voting. And I think that would help. Nothing is a solution, but I think that would contribute.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a big part of the solution. I think that's a great idea you have.
I wish I could claim credit. It's something I heard many years ago that's it's not talked about much, but I think a 24-hour election day where everything opens and closes, so they can't say, well, you know, the polls on the East Coast are closed now, and so-and-so is ahead, and we're waiting for the polls to close in Central and Mountain and Pacific. It's like, that's not right. Everything should close and open at the same time. And that way, all the results are available as they're available, but technically at the same time. And you know, there have been elections like when Jimmy Carter lost the election in 80. One of the complaints was that he had conceded before the West Coast polls had even closed. It's almost like making their vote irrelevant. There are so many elections where a candidate in Texas, we've had gubernatorial candidates, for example, that the polls closed at 8 and by 9 they're conceding. And it's like there are still people standing in line at the polls. You know, they're still counting votes. And what they're doing is conceding on the projection. And they just shouldn't ought to do that. I just don't think that that's a good civic attitude. It's like, hey, man, my vote mattered. If it didn't matter, I shouldn't have gone to vote. If you're not going to wait for it to be counted, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we actually saw some of that in some of the races with the midterms.
We see that in every race in the last few years.
I mean, where it was people conceded it, and as people continued to vote,
yep,
the votes were going the other way to the person who conceded, and so they'd have to take back the concession.
That happens occasionally, and, you know, statistics, it's both art and science, and they're pretty good at it most of the time. But, you know, it doesn't even matter to me whatever the statistics, the exit polls, I think they matter at a certain point. But I don't think anybody should concede before the vast majority of votes are actually counted, regardless of what the stats and probabilities say. It's just a matter of respect.
I agree.
Okay, do we have anything else to talk about?
No, that was it. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your calling, Mark. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got about a minute, so if you want to say something in like two sentences, you can call, but I find that's a really hard thing to do. I appreciate all the callers. I appreciate, of course, the regular callers. I especially appreciate people that call for the first time, that begin to really participate as a community on this show. Very, very exciting for me. Very gratifying. Very much appreciated. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We are an eclectic show. We had a big discussion on cannabis that I was totally unprepared for, so that was actually pretty cool. Occasionally we can talk about science, technology, philosophy. You know, I'm up for a lot of stuff. There are certain topics that I'm really going to suck on, but for the most part, I'm eclectic. You know, my knowledge is like a mile wide, an inch deep, in some places 6 or 7 inches. That's how I like to describe it. But I appreciate all your listeners. I appreciate your compliments and your comments, and look forward to speaking with you again next week. So this has been, can I get some outro music there, Naboo? So this has been Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, and we're going to get some public service stuff, so stay tuned. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Have you mixed your pain meds, your sleep meds, your allergy meds? Call the Poison Helpline. Has your child eaten a tube of toothpaste, a chip of paint, a wild mushroom? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you been bitten by a spider, a snake, an insect? Call the Poison Helpline. Poisonings can happen at the home, on the job, or in the great outdoors. Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. 1-800-222-1222. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Has your child swallowed your medicine, your laundry detergent, your nail polish remover? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you inhaled paint thinner, glue, pesticides? Call the Poison Helpline. Have a question about a dose, a fume, something your kid just drank? Call the Poison Helpline. Poisonings can happen at the home, on the job, or in the great outdoors. Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. 1-800-222-1222. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Where freedom rings and singers sing. Where Robert Earl Keane meets Martin Luther King. From jazz, justice, peace and rap. R&B, sports, blues and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves. A true community. celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love, where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Welcome home.
It is 4 p.m. This is KPFT FM in Houston, Texas, 90.1 FM. In Galveston, it's 89.5 FM, and in Huntsville,